face, okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns.
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know that.
That's it. I'm done.
Hello, and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. Mr. Lou Michaels. Lou, you're not missing if you're long. The S&P's down 18, the Dow's down 159, and the NASDAQ down 41. But you're missing the, I guess we could say in the midst of the rain, weather here in Chicago last week with all the record stuff and everything, that we have absolutely lucked out. We probably have had, how many inches of rain between then, Matty, that if it would have been, snow, we'd be, what, on the fourth floor or something?
Yeah, it's been a lot of rain over the last handful of days.
It's
You guys don't need any more moisture.
Correct.
No.
None. You've had plenty. I can't imagine that. And isn't the ground frozen solid?
It was 50 some degrees, but we do have some, water issues in that the Kankakee River had this massive ice dam. All of a sudden blew yesterday, and flooded a whole bunch of stuff downstream. I don't know exactly what, but it was...
They said that happens like every year, though, so they're kind of prepared for it.
But a little early.
Than normal.
I don't know, the rivers, they have their issues. But, yeah, we've had, the last how many years we've had all kinds of rain. I mean, it's... And out west, they've got none.
I mean, we just had another snowfall here in Denver. Which I'm sorry, it's my adopted home now, and I love it and I love the people, but I am going to refer to Denver as a cow town until they start plowing their streets. I could not have imagined the disruption that simply not getting snow off the streets creates for a city that doesn't have a significant mass transit operation, and it is unbelievably disruptive and dangerous, and it multiplies the difficulty of getting around tenfold. You know, there are hills here, unlike Chicago, and the hills here create real problems, especially for people with two-wheel drive vehicles, when you don't have, you know, you don't have pavement, and then they do not, because of the change, the variability in climate here. They do not plow most of the streets, and it's hilarious. I mean, you can't get around, and it's created all kinds of problems for the city. So we had a snowfall last week that was supposed to be 1 to 2 inches, ended up being almost 10, and then the snowfall yesterday was supposed to go. I think 1 to 2 or 1 to 3, and I think we ended up with almost five or six. And 5 or 6 inches of snow being crushed into, you know, that kind of mushy plastic stuff that happens to snow when hundreds of cars drive over it.
Oh, yeah.
That stuff pounded into the streets is just a disaster.
Yes, it is. Ruts and everything. It's pretty interesting. Back when, so I read this stuff a lot. I don't know why I read it and remember it, but I do. Back in the Jane Byrne era, when she became mayor, pretty much because of snow.
Right.
Everybody really has a design program for their snow combatants. It pretty much follows their weather. And when you say Denver does not, the variability of the weather, and they don't plow the snow, they're amazingly used to having 5 inches of snow one day, which is not all that often there, and the next day being 60 degrees. Correct?
Right.
So
yes, that's it. Now today, unfortunately, it's 1 degree above zero right now, and I think we're going to a high of 20. Yeah. So this mess is going to continue for at least another couple of days.
And I'm going to say that if you look back, and not knowing anything about the Denver stuff, I will make this prediction: if you look back at the weather, that virtually every time your string of days below freezing is rare in terms of temperature.
Correct.
In Chicago, when I was reading, because everybody was pretty much talking about ragging at somebody, Mayor Bolandic, about the snow. Now this year we've had some cold weather, and yet we've had what, two major thaws already, right, Manny?
Yeah, the reason our ground isn't frozen at all is because right after we've had the really cold week, it's been followed by 50 degree weather every time.
Yeah.
Like immediately.
So Chicago is...
And like today it's going up to 44, and then we get cold again tomorrow. Tomorrow it's going to be a high of 4, and wind chills at negative 20.
Right. But what I'm saying is people, they do this, reason kind of why I know this a little, is Boston, when I was at Pullman, first Pullman reference. They had some snowstorm. I was at Pullman in probably 78. So somewhere in 77 or 76, Betty could probably look it up, Boston had some massive snowstorm. I mean, massive northeaster. The place was just jam-packed with crap to the point where even the trains couldn't run. It was that much snow. What's the name of the place? Anthony's Pier 4 had some boat called the Peter Stuyvesant that they put up on blocks and the water came in so bad it took Peter Stuyvesant to wash it back into the water and then it sank. I mean, it was that bad. And, Oh, yeah. And, so it was, you know, so anyway, so they said, so just so the rails would always run, they go out and they buy this thing that was a snow eater. You could put it on the front of a locomotive and the thing would go along. It was this massive, like, fan that would eat the snow in front of it and pitch it, you know, God knows where. And the thing cost at that time, you know, $350,000, which is 1970 something, was a lot of money. Well, it turns out they had put the thing, they had never used it over the next 10 years, and it rusted and they scrapped it. You know, so it's one of those things where you, in Chicago has, they have massive amounts of snow plows and massive amounts of salt trucks. And their job is to push the stuff to the side of the road, salt it, wait a week for the weather to change, and it will all melt. Which is 99% of the time, it works for them. It's not snow removal. Now, if you move into Buffalo, Minnesota, or Minneapolis, Toronto, if it snows in November, it's a bulldozer into a dump truck out of there, because they will not push it to the side of the street because they know in 4 months it's still going to be there. So they call it snow removal, and they're not kidding. They remove it because they know it's not going to melt. Remember, Dr. J's wife, they're both from Minnesota, when we were playing somewhere, we were out skiing, and of course it snows. And so we go out to shovel, and me, like your half-assed Chicago guy, you know, you get to the end of the sidewalk, you flip it, and you're happy. And she's like, "Chief, you're gussing." I go, "I'm what?" "You're gussing." "Bridge, I have no idea what you're talking about." "You're giving up space. You can't leave an inch on the sidewalk the first snow. Because if you do that every snow, you're not going to be able to walk down the middle by January. You have to shovel the entire sidewalk every time."
Is that a common term, Lou, in Minnesota? I've never heard that one.
I don't know if I've heard that, but what he's describing is exactly how people talk up there, in terms of removing the snow and clearing everything.
I love the
which by the way, and I'm going to quit talking about the weather because I want to talk about this Virginia governor thing briefly. They don't clear their, there's no requirement here that businesses clear their sidewalks in front of their doors.
That's ridiculous.
So it's hit or miss. And, I may have told this story before, but I recall going out to dinner one night here, and, they'd had an 8-inch snowfall, and, you know, women who had dressed for dinner walking around in heels and, you know, nice shoes, just buried, you know, with up to their ankles in slush and snow on the sidewalks because nobody was clearing it. And I was astounded. You know, again, why is this not an ordinance? So I realize we all get pushy about the nanny state there in Chicago, but I mean, you know, major metropolitan areas have to think about how they deal with this stuff. And I don't think Denver's leadership. I think Denver's leadership's a little behind the times in terms of what they think about and what they need to do.
They still haven't figured out they're a big city, Lou.
Well, I think that's right, and although in certain aspects they have, because you know we're tolerant of, you know, homelessness and the issues that, that it generates down here, and drug abuse. In fact, they're actually talking about putting up an injection center in Denver where people can go in and shoot themselves up and nobody will arrest them. So I'm astounded at that. I wanted to talk about the Virginia situation because I lived there for many years, and because what's happening with that governor and the lieutenant governor and now the attorney general raises so many questions in terms of, you know, conduct that we all did as young men or young people versus you know, how long stuff stays in your permanent record, or how long it should stay in your permanent record. Can you be rehabilitated? And then what I think probably for me is the biggest issue is the incredible double standard in journalism.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's been demonstrated on these issues.
Well, look at the double standard in the double standard in everywhere though, and just in the last 3 days. Real quick, I was mentioning to Maddie on the way in. You have the president who, on any different, 15 different times, I've seen the guy spout out the same crap, basically, and the same statistics. The next day, every journalist does the fact check. No, you haven't done much more in terms of, you haven't really done any more in terms of, people being hired than the last 2 years of Obama's thing. This is here. This is the economy. This is the number. There's no record here. There's no anything. Yet the guy says it again the next day. I mean, if you were listening from Mars and you listen to him, this is the greatest economy in the history of the world. Yesterday, all the people did from the old Fed saying that the Fed needs room to lower rates because we're slowing down. I'm going, if somebody listened to this crap from somewhere else and just listened in, they'd wonder, these people are nuts.
Well, I can, in terms of holding people to, you know, what they say, I'm less concerned about politicians puffing themselves because, you know, the Obama people did the same kind of thing. I don't like it. I don't give presidents credit or necessarily blame for what happens in an economy unless they've been in there for a while. But having said that, that is less of a concern for me than a clear cut situation like the Brett Kavanaugh Fairfax situation, where you have a guy who is not credibly accused of engaging in some kind of sexual misconduct by somebody from high school 35 years ago, and the press runs that story and gleefully reports every crazy turn in it, versus a situation where you have a black Democrat politician. At least more credibly accused of sexual assault in terms of the fact that the woman remembers date, place, name, he admits the association with her, and the Washington Post and other media outlets kill the story, you know, rather than putting it out there.
For some reason, and we've talked about it here and lightly, because, you know, I don't want to go down that road too heavy, there is, for some reason, there is problems in every ethnic area, there's everything that you can see. If you go on TV here in Chicago and if you were to say, by the way, 84% of all the murders are black people, that's a staff that's been there for, I mean, you're just telling the truth. And if you don't know what the truth is, you can't attack the problem. If you don't know somebody's got a broken leg, what are you going to be doing? Feeding them aspirin for the pain for the next 6 months? I mean, we can't somehow do that. But we've gone from, and this is the part I don't, I think you need to, you and a lot of other people, and I'm sorry that I've came to this conclusion, that what you consider to be, and what other people consider to be, and I've never done this, to be honest with you, I never considered CNBC, CNN, or Fox to be news. It's entertainment. It's ratings. It's not Walter Cronkite. It never was. It's never designed to be that way. It's designed to pander to whoever is who's listening to those to that stuff. I mean,
here's how I look at it, and I long ago came to the conclusion that the role of the press was to sell advertising, and if the truth was salacious enough or you know, exciting enough to sell advertising, then you've got a reasonable facsimile of the truth or the facts. But if the truth wasn't enough to sell advertising, then you get something else.
I'll listen to you on all stuff of attorney stuff and virtually everything else. But you got to listen. I'm learning a little bit about this medium. Don't get me wrong. I still ask Matty Weber questions about the radio business because he knows more about it than I am. But back in the day, they carved out 15 minutes a day, or was it a half hour for the evening news? The news in Chicago was, they carved out 15 minutes of the whole day. And they said, here is the news. And most of them did just that. Here was the news for 15 minutes. You know, we hate like hell that we have to get rid of a program for this 15 minutes or half hour, but we will do it because we think it's our public stuff. And they actually gave you the news. Once it went 24 hours, it's entertainment, bud. It's all it is.
I think here's my take, and my point is simply this. We see now this double standard in terms of what gets reported and how it's slanted very, very clearly. Fox, I don't think made any bones about it. You know, but the Washington Post put a $5.3 million advertisement out for the Super Bowl talking about how crucial journalism was and how trustworthy they were and how important it was that, you know, that they do their job. And you know, the longer issue here for me is not necessarily whether Fairfax did anything or whatever. I'll let the voters of Virginia deal with that, or their elected representatives. It is the naked bias of major journalism centers that, in my opinion, have been engaged in a concerted effort to take down a lawfully elected president of the United States. And I consider that to be a real problem. I've always thought, ever since I've been involved with the press, and I was involved in media stories in the 1980s where you know, major stuff, I've always thought that the press had an agenda. It's just that when we were three major networks and we didn't have alternatives that were readily available, you couldn't see the bias. But if you watch the press coverage during the Vietnam War, or you watch the press coverage of Watergate, you saw selective stories, selective editing going on, and it wasn't that apparent to us.
Walter Cronkite was
trustworthy because he reminded us of our grandfather. But the short answer is that Walter and the rest of them were skewing the news, and were editors in New York or editors in L.A. were making selections about what the American public.
Everybody always does. I mean, it's just in the way Walter Cronkite.
Exactly.
Walter Cronkite damn near ended the.
It's been going on for decades.
Yeah, but he damn near ended the Vietnam War by coming back and saying, "What are we doing? We can't win this." When he went on, off script the one night.
Well, that was in response. That was in response to Tet, and the Tet Offensive, I believe. And you know, my reaction to that was, again, come on, man, what are you doing? You know, that's not your job.
But you just said something in the show today, and again, this is why. You know, it's funny, Luke. When I come in the morning and Maddie being, I sort of can't wait to get here and find something that I think people have not picked up some other place and pointed out and what it might mean to them. You know, it doesn't mean I'm always right or after. That we know that for sure, and I'll be happy to change my mind because I don't really care what if I was misinformed 2 months from now ago and fix it today. You know, if ever somebody throws me up there for public office and throws the show up against my face 2 months from now, you know what? I don't give a blip. I don't give a rat's behind, to be honest with you, because that's not what I care about. I care about finding some pieces of information that people may not in their normal life see, and they can listen to this and pick up a pearl that maybe will help them out somewhere in their day, or at least the next time they vote. But there are people, and the issue with this president is, and I understand the difference between the Republicans and the Democrats, and Matty, you know, has his own personal views, but the bottom line is if you talk to somebody, to me, Lou, the man is reprehensible. He lies like a rug, as my grandmother used to say. He has no concept of the truth. He's gone way past it. Now, if you talk to somebody who's, maybe they're liberal, maybe they don't like him, maybe they're whatever, in their mind, the thought of this guy representing them on the world stage is like a thorn up their behind. and they can't handle it. And then the other person, and you
mentioned, I would say that is a significant portion of the opposition leadership. And you and I have talked about this. I've said many times, all the Democrats have to do to deal with the president and you know, probably defeat him, is to not lose their minds.
I understand that.
They
can't do it. But if you talk to somebody that, and I get this too. I try and understand both sides. I get this too. If you talk to, for God's sake, my significant other likes the guy, you know, and her response is, every politician I've ever met did nothing to lie to me. He's a little worse. What's the difference? That's not the answer, Lou. Not in America, in my mind. But you know, how many times a day can I say that?
But the trouble is, and I don't.
And she's not wrong. She's not wrong, by the way, by saying that. She's not wrong.
I know. I look at the president. I look at the president right now, and I view the president as a symptom of.
I do too.
Political malaise.
I do too.
Not as a cause. He's a guy that came up through and out of a broken, fractured political process. And he was a third party candidate chief, effectively.
Yeah.
Who managed to co-opt one of the major parties' electoral processes. Now the Democrats threw a wrench into the system to prevent Sanders from doing the same thing. They
Correct.
Skewed the election and fixed their primary process for Hillary Clinton. But the Republicans didn't. And the Republican Party and Republican voters and a lot of other people too dialed into this guy because he was an alternative, a complete outsider, and an alternative to what was being presented to them, and is perceived, I think, rightly or wrongly, as if not being absolutely, a truthful reporter of things, he's perceived as being a viable alternative because he's giving a voice to people who felt they didn't have one.
Well, you know, what's interesting, Lou, I don't know if you've heard other people say it, but...
Let me add one more thing. This and because the most confusing thing to me about the president and the election of the president was the fact that you have a significant population of evangelical Christians and other very religious people who voted for him, notwithstanding these dramatic and obvious character flaws. And why is that? And I firmly believe this, because they believe, the people who voted for him, the evangelicals and other religious folks, they believe that the Democrats not only don't represent them, but object to them and want to eliminate them.
I also think that at some point people will vote for Joe Stalin if they think it's worth their pocketbook. They'll make up some excuse. SP futures down 15, Dow futures down 141, NASDAQ down 37. It's actually a little bit better than when we came in. We're still down pretty heavy. Be right back, Stacks and Jack.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with their choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of HomeSource Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a 1 month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holly. Mr. Michael, this is Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures down 16, Dow Futures down 142, and the Futures down 43. Very interesting article here. I won't go through it because there's a lot of stuff in it, but take a look at it this morning on, if you want. Article by Justin Fox. It's, Try Your Government On for Size. Has to do with, eight or nine charts regarding how big government really is. But they're all done with some sort of a factor in there. $2,009, $2,000. They're very educational, but I kind of Lou, what you're saying is that they're telling you that the government's not too big, and yet I'm not so sure that that's right. Anyway, we'll talk about that a little bit once we get done with the West Virginia thing. Anyway, over in Europe, we've got DAX down 150, that's 1.3%. FTSE up 3, call that flat. CAC around down 32, that's 0.6%. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei down 122, that's 0.6%. Shanghai, these guys I think are still closed. Hang Seng is up 59.2%. Shanghai is the same number every day. I promise every morning I'm going to look at that, and then I don't, but I will today for sure. Oil down 39 cents, 53.62. Brent down 26 cents, 62.43. Oil has dropped into this really narrow range now in the last couple of weeks. Natural gas, 262. RBOB, 144. RBOB has actually creeped up about
10 cents in the last week, even though oil has remained steady. It's a little strange. Gold, we've got down 450. Is it? It does this. It keeps going up, and then when the dollar turns around, it must go back the other way. Silver down 5 cents, 1565. Twitter's down a little bit, as their guidance was not the best, but not horrible. Matty, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We have a couple of issues already due to some rainy conditions in the area. Some slow travel times building on the Kennedy. My screen just froze. There we go. Looks like we have a crash on the inbound Kennedy at Addison. That's causing the issue. A car into the wall is causing...
I'm thinking the wall one.
Yeah, we're thinking the wall one, that collision. It's causing some significant delays on the inbound Kennedy, and traffic is building. Right now, we're at about 42 minutes from O'Hare into downtown, but that's growing significantly, and that's a high travel time for 6:30 a.m. local time here. It's not affecting the Edens yet. Eisenhower looks okay. Stevenson, there is a crash northbound just before Cicero out near Midway, so keep that in mind as well. Southside expressways are looking okay. Indiana Toll Road is closed due to an accident east between Wolf Lake and Klein Avenue on the Indiana side. So the eastbound lanes of the Indiana Toll Road at Klein Avenue, mile marker 3.8, are blocked with a crash involving two vehicles, and that's causing a mess in northwest Indiana. So all kinds of issues, most likely due to the rain this morning, so keep that in mind as you're heading out, and the rain will continue on and off throughout the day. We'll reach a high of 44, and then tonight the temperatures completely crash. In our overnight low, we get down to 4 degrees with a wind chill of negative 20. And then we go up to just a high of 14 tomorrow. So enjoy the warmth today, even though it'll be wet out there, because it's going to be freezing cold tomorrow with wind chills well below zero. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 58 today. Right now it's clear and 35. In sports, the Bulls were in a high-scoring affair at home last night against New Orleans. Fell to the Pelicans 125-120. The big news of the night was they traded Bobby Portis and Jabari Parker to the Wizards for Otto Porter. He was a Georgetown standout, and he's been in the league for 5 or 6 years with the Wizards. He's a couple
unremarkably.
Yeah, it's a couple years left on his deal, but it's Portis and Parker for Porter. So see if you can get that right later in the day. Suns were blown out by Utah 116-88. College hoops, Notre Dame lost big at Miami 62-47. Cheap.
Did you watch that game?
It was on. I didn't really watch it though.
In my day, well, let's put it this way, the teams, they kept winging them up. I think they were 7 for 50 combined from 3-point shots.
Well, it's a very low scoring game, 62-47, and I'm surprised they shot that many threes.
They just kept winging them up. You gotta catch up, gotta throw the threes up there. Anyway, Lou, I don't know if you've been sort of following this, but, The guys who were on Face the Nation a few weeks ago, I mentioned this before. This kind of goes on with the sort of the theme I've had with the Obama/Trump/ what we're trying to get now, or what we're trying to get now, is that Newt Gingrich, of all people, said that the Trump phenomenon is just a continuation of the Obama phenomenon. That people wanted somebody outside of Washington that he wasn't co-opted. He was only a first-term senator. That didn't work out so hot for the co-opted part. So then they said, well, that didn't work. We need a guy who's totally outside, is not willing to, not afraid to call these people the names they really deserve to be called. And that was Trump. And now the young Democrats in this case, they were on Face the Nation. I think the Republicans were on a week before. They said, what was your campaign? She goes, the same as Trump's. We're telling people that Washington is non-functional and we're younger and we're going to go in there and be a little more aggressive and turn it around. I mean, it's the same thing. The Schumers and the Pelosi's and the Mitch McConnell's of the world, I don't think they have any idea how much they are vilified by normal Americans. It's absolutely the face of the problem. Now, of course, what most Americans don't quite get is the real problem is a lot of money's coming back from the government to people and they're cashing checks. So you're never going to get a check, cash it, and figure out you never feel you're a piece of the problem, right? You paid in for it, you did this and that.
That's probably true.
I mean,
my take is that again, let me recommend that the readers, I've dropped this woman's name before. She's a writer called I think she's working for Pittsburgh paper, but she's freelancing right now, named Selena Zito, and she is a terrific commentator on all of this stuff. She predicted the Trump victory. And and she did it based on her traveling around in rural areas of Pennsylvania and seeing just how widespread the support for him was. But I would recommend looking at some of the stuff she's written lately. There's definitely a dissatisfaction with what you're seeing in D.C. in terms of political sensitivity and just overall responsiveness. But the answer, as is always the case with you know, long-term political types, the answer is more government and you know, a bigger government and more spending. And it's we talked about this last week. It's going to become unsustainable. What you're seeing with Illinois, I think, is just a foreshadowing of what we could see quite easily in D.C. You know, in another generation.
I don't think it'll be that long.
I was gonna make a point, you know, because this will resonate with a lot of your listeners. When did it become such a bad thing to be a billionaire? You know, I mean, when did being somebody like Mr. Schultz from Starbucks, self-made, hauling yourself up by the bootstraps, getting yourself into a position where you can make a lot of money and then doing it, when did that become anathema to you know, the average American? I'm not sure it has, but it's certainly being painted that way by
I'll give you the same story that I gave Kevin the other day. There's, when you look at the tax stuff, Louis, you know that me being an entrepreneur my whole life, never would want the tax rates to go up. The idea that Lou could start a business, and if he wins, he owes the government 70%, and if he loses, he gets to take $3,000 a year off for the rest of his life, is absolute insanity. Yet, as you, by the way, because I always try and, your name comes up in this conversation all the time, as you have brilliantly said, we have become a fascist society economically, or we're getting there.
Yeah, we're getting there.
Okay, what I'm saying is the in a lot of these people's view, and I'm gonna be blunt with you, Lou, and I shouldn't do this on the air, but I will. What's her name? SOC knows nothing about economics. Nothing. She's a 29-year-old girl, or guy, or I mean, it doesn't matter whether you're a girl. Knows nothing about economics. Knows nothing about economic history. I'm sure has, you know, whatever, or probably knows some, and she's probably brilliant in her own way. Obviously, she got in that job, so she's brilliant at something. But she's not dumb, okay, and she's learning. They sense something wrong, Lou, that if Schultz, or if you, or if Maddie Weber goes home and has another job, from 6 to 9 when everybody else is out in the bar, and he pounds away at whatever it is, whether it's an organic drug that becomes a cure for something, or whether it's a different website or whatever, and he works his behind off, and he becomes a billionaire. I don't think anybody from my generation, or yours the same one, would ever begrudge him any of that money, in my view. Yet, you look around at the people that have money now, virtually all of them, Lou, work for somebody else in a monopolistic, nose-up-the-ass of government business, that the board just votes some stuff because they think they deserve it. They have no skin in the game. They have nothing. And if that guy's making $10 million a year, people look at it and they go, that's too much. You look at what you pay for health care, and you look at the guy at the insurance company walking away with a $460 million settlement because somebody bought another one. People look at that and they go, wait a minute, 35% is not enough. That's just wrong. And you know what, Luke? They're not all wrong on that one. That person is no more the guy from Starbucks than you and I are 18 years old. I mean, the guy from Starbucks did a lot of this on his own. It was his own stock, and his money in the game. I begrudge that guy nothing. But now these other people, I begrudge the guy who Pfizer, whoever made $1 billion for 19 years on Viagra, and the guy had nothing to do with either the investment in Viagra, either in the development of it or anything. He just walked in on somebody else's coattails and talked to board and paying him that much. That's a different program in my mind. And these young kids, they can't articulate it like I can, but they know something's wrong. Am I right, Maddie?
Well, but the point is that you can't make a differentiation or make that kind of differentiation in any way.
I understand that.
enforceable.
I understand that. The solution would be worse than the crime. It doesn't mean it doesn't mean that people aren't looking at this and going, hey, what did that guy do for $5 million? 35% down. The government gave him the dough, for God's sake.
In some cases, yes, and that's the crony capitalism slash fascism that I've addressed and we talked about before. But what is being waged right now, I think, by the younger Democratic leadership, and it's being parroted by people like Harris and Elizabeth Warren. We'll talk about her in a second. Is class warfare. And that's what you're seeing right now. And that's what I see the Democrats working at. Or that's the angle that's being pursued right now. Warren has proposed a tax that I think is just simply not going to pass constitutional.
I understand that.
But has a lot of appeal because it takes from the billionaires. And, the perception of unfairness, that's the real issue.
It's not perception.
That's the biggest
concern. It's not perception. Why is it perception? When I worked at Pullman, and you go back to 1980, and I'm not saying that 80 was the great year, it wasn't. You're talking about people who were chairmen of corporations that made 20 to 25 times what regular people in the place made. Now it's 1,000 times. The number's just too big. There are guys that are worth that, but they're not all worth that. I mean, people have this view, and I've said on a couple, they have this view that the entire board system, the corporate board system, and how much people get paid, and who does what, in the world that's becoming more monopolistic, cartelization of America, the total board system has failed. And just because they can talk their board into making it more $50 billion a year. I don't have to worry, Lou, about the head of your law firm making $400 million a year. Because if it's not competitive, there's all kinds of law firms. You guys are a lot of business. I don't have to worry about what Nick pays himself at Nick and Dino's Triple E Tap. Because if he tries to take a salary of $1 million, guess what? There's no beer in the place. But in all these other places, the government has created these monsters. And now people are sitting there going, who's that guy? It's Germany all over again from 1991 when Dr. J and I were over lecturing. The people working and doing all the trades and working their ass off in the bank all day are making enough to live in an apartment with three other people. Meanwhile, the chairman of the place is making $90 billion and he's getting street people up to his upstairs, which has a swimming pool in it, or not, a reflecting pool, where they listen to music all afternoon. I mean, stuff gets wrong here.
I agree. I agree, but I don't think government is the fix.
I don't think the tax law is the fix, but what I'm saying is they look at that and they say 35% is not enough.
Well, they're saying 35%, and here's where the big difference comes in. I sympathize with a lot of this, but the reason 35% is not enough is because they are looking at expanding. They're looking at an expanding government entitlement program that simply is unsustainable. And you know, my response is 35% isn't enough. You're saying 35% is enough because of the unfairness. I'm saying 35% is too much. Or
it is too much.
In their mind, 35% isn't enough because they are looking at it and want to support an inefficient and bloated system.
I'm saying it's not enough. Is if you and I go out and we put skin in the game and we start a business, if we make money, we give them 35%. That's fine. If we lose money, we can't take it off. That's crazy, Lou. That's absolutely crazy. And the other part is you'll never hear the rich guys. You never hear them talk about the single biggest tax thing that I know of is the estate tax. Estate tax, Lou. If you bought 50,000 shares of IBM when you were 10 years old, and you're up $90 bazillion on it, tomorrow morning you get run over by a bus, and your kids split that in half. You have two kids or three, whatever, they split it up. You know what their basis now becomes? Today's number. Nobody ever pays taxes on the part where you bought it at $10, and 160 it is today. That's in the code. Who else gets to do that, Lou? I mean,
don't get me started on estate taxes, because you and I have a fundamental disagreement there. But
I'm not talking about estate taxes. I'm talking about when somebody sells that. I'm talking about income taxes on that stock. Nobody pays.
Yes,
I'm with you on the estate taxes. But by the same token,
let me since we have a jocks portion of this, I wanted to talk briefly about the Super Bowl. I don't know if you guys picked up on analysis, but I wanted to float my theory to you two guys, because I respect your opinion a lot on this, as to what exactly New England is doing. And I have not heard this anywhere. So if somebody else has jumped with this or run with this, I have not seen this. I think what Belichick does, I think Tom Brady is a terrific quarterback, but the secret to that team is Belichick. I think what Belichick's people do, and this is genius in its own right, is that they bring in guys and tell them, look, we're only going to ask you to do maybe be good at maybe 5 or 10 separate blocking patterns, routes, plays, whatever. Things we want you to do. We're only going to ask you to do 5 or 10 of those things, because otherwise the game gets too complicated. And you have to think too much, and that slows us down. We're going to ask you to memorize and be capable of doing maybe 5 or 10 things, but you're going to do them perfectly. It's like the old Green Bay Packers and their sweep. Everybody knew it was coming. Everybody knew it was going to happen. But because it was executed perfectly, it was almost always a ground gainer. I think Belichick's guys have got their offensive and defensive schemes down to a point where they've refined it down into these 5 or 10 techniques that they want each player to learn. They're not all the same, obviously, based on position. And then they adapt that very basic skill set, those very basic routes. They adapt that each week to whomever they're playing. And that's a lot harder than it looks, but I think that's the only way you revamp your defense and your offense the way the Patriots do it for each opponent and then do it again in the playoffs. I mean, what you saw in the Super Bowl and it completely flummoxed Goff and to a certain extent I think flummoxed McVay on the Rams.
I don't think Goff's that good.
What you saw the Patriots do was go to a defensive front that was almost unrecognizable in terms of sort of standard defenses. They did the same thing with their offenses, where they have their players do certain stuff, but they can reshift that and reorient those offenses and defenses each week. And the only way you can do that I could think of, is to have very, very basic skill sets that then get plugged and played into whatever scheme you happen to put together. What do you think?
I'll go first. I'm going to say two things. I'll be very brief. One is that they have a tremendous front office that somehow gets the best out of the bottom 10 people on the roster. They're masters at it.
Well, that goes to not asking people to do too much.
It's other people not knowing who they have either. I mean, I read this huge thing, which I won't go into, where they talked about 1 year they got rid of a fifth round pick for 2 6th round picks. Then the next year their two 6th round people at least made it to the practice squad, and one guy was on the special teams, and the 5th round pick that somebody else grabbed was out of football. I mean, they constantly have people that contribute at that level, but I think what they do is, as Tony Dungy said it once, he goes, the one thing you have to worry about when you play Bill Belichick is you don't have to waste time all week watching films, because they don't do you any good. He has something totally different the next week. I think what it is, Lou, honestly, is I tried to do this when I coached touch, and I never was so good at it. I think they teach the offensive people the defenses. So when Ellsbury goes up to the line and he sees a cover two, he knows it's going to be a play action, that the middle linebacker is not going to get back. He knows that the hole is right behind the middle linebacker. I think they react to the defense better than anybody else, and maybe do mentally at the line, to where the play calling is very simple. To where it's all a reaction.
That's what I mean. I mean they've got a basic set of terminology and techniques, and they don't modify it. If you don't have a guy with 15 routes off the passing tree that then they scrap and reset you know, to another 15 routes the next week. They can't do that. No, the people aren't. They don't. There's not enough practice time. This system that Belichick has, and whatever it is, and I mean, I wouldn't surprise me if he's cheating again. But in any event, I think what they've done is they've basically refined football for them. They've refined football down to a very limited set.
Did you listen to
people to do at each position?
Did you listen to Tony Romo last week? The game before the Super Bowl, you listened to Tony Romo where they're playing. Were they playing Kansas City?
And
Tony Romo, Maddie, we and I were talking about this in the way in one morning. Tony Romo was sitting there going, "Well, look at the weak side here. The Patriots have four people, and the Kansas City has three. Because Kansas City is so worried about stopping the Gronk side." I said, he said something like, "I'm not the only person who's seeing that." He goes, "Somewhere there's going to be a play they need it, and they're going to go over there because they got one more guy." As complicated as it gets, it drops back to its simplicity. It's like trading. It's the same way.
Yeah, there are masters at exploiting matchups and isolating matchups to get what they want, and it's basically on every single play, they're going to have one extra guy that you don't have, and they're masters at that. And that's why Romo was so able to predict what they were going to do on each play.
But they didn't do it right away, Matty. They waited until they needed it.
Well, in the second half, when they did need it, they did it on every single play, and he predicted it every single time. And then they have a quarterback that puts it right between the numbers every time, which helps.
That's right. But what that requires you to do, readjust. If you've got a complex scheme where you're looking to do that, and there are certain things you want to be able to do, and it's a complex scheme, for you to get that kind of mismatch every week means you have to rewrite your offense because your mismatch is going to be different every week. I think that they are not a complex system. I think they are a very simple system because that gives them this tremendous flexibility in terms of getting the mismatches, in terms of identifying, where they want to put the ball, how they want to put it. I mean, and they're not relying. Here's what others really. I think it's really interesting. They're not relying on talent mismatches. Because they're not the most talented team on the field. What they're doing is they're getting the most talented guys they've got and getting them against the least talented people that the other team has.
Well, they have a spectacular block.
That requires a very simple, basic set of things that you do that you just flex differently, slightly differently each week.
Well, they have a spectacular blocker in a tight end who helps dramatically when they decide to run. And their offensive line is... Some people, I've read that they thought that was the best offensive line he's ever had.
The thing about these guys, though, is that they've been doing it for 20 years, so the players don't matter. Brady's the only constant.
That's another factor, Matty.
Yeah, and frankly, the assistant coaches don't matter either because they've cycled through assistant coaches like crazy. They've had different offensive coordinators, different defensive coordinators. It's all Belichick and Brady.
But many of the players have been similar.
Yeah, but it's just been different guys. They just plug and play different guys. But they had Gronk for a while,
the guy they had before him was the guy that killed himself. He was spectacular.
Well, he played during Gronk, Aaron Hernandez. But before that, when they were winning Super Bowls literally 18, 19 years ago with Brady and Belichick, they had like Ben Coates and just random guys. Then
they were cheating.
Well,
I mean, yeah. I mean, they were cheating with the video stuff up until what, 2007, 2008?
Yeah, it's remarkable. The guy is the best at talent evaluation. I think Lou is onto something with the simplicity of what they do. As far as they're more fundamentally sound than everybody.
Well, mentally, Manny, I don't know if you've heard this, but a defensive coach can never become an offensive coach because he will never design an offense that can beat his defense. And I think this guy's an unusual thing to that because they always have, doesn't always have to be white, but they always got this very clever little slot receiver that runs around and wherever the hole is in the defense, the guy goes and stands there. That's been a constant for forever. It's the Dennis Gentry thing, only better. This guy, it just happens to be this guy this year, but how many of those guys has he had? Who was the guy who was the MVP?
Another thing that argues for simplicity and plug and play guys. They look for specific guys who will be coachable to do specific things.
Right.
They don't need them to do a lot of them. They don't need to out athlete people. They need to out precision people.
Lou, I would bet that if your dad was still alive, if you were to say, cover two, cover one, name the five defenses that people play, he would tell you exactly where the hole is in all five of them.
He would do that. He was a great guy to watch a football game with because you'd learn so much just listening to him just sort of dissect what was happening on the field. But he was a big believer in simple, straightforward things, you know, a couple of principles, and then plugging the right people into those positions that would do exactly what he wanted, you know, at the right time. And he was not a big believer in, you know, complicated schemes. He was a believer in being able to do basic stuff well and then flexing that around your game plan.
Well, real quick, the guy who destroyed the 46 defense was Don Shula, right?
Yep.
Where the two linebackers would line up over the tight end, and they'd come in and they'd bury the tight end and they'd come to the quarterback. He put a slot receiver right there, and as those guys came in, slot receiver went out and they just threw right over the top of their head. So all of a sudden you had a linebacker covering a slot receiver and that didn't work. Then you had to bring in a deep back to cover him, and then you lost your 46, right?
Yep.
Lou, thank you very much, buddy. SP Futures down 17. We're not going too far here. Dow's down 148, NASDAQ down 147. Come back, Mr. Fari Hamzy. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we are also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. It might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com, or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's john@PTISecurities.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here.
There's something happening here.
Load up, it's Tyson Jackson. I'm Tom Holly's Mr. Matt Weber. Mr. Ferry Hamsey. We have SQ Futures still down 1675. Down on 147.
Hello.
So not a bullish morning so far. Ferry's going to tell us why. Why are we not bullish this morning, Ferry?
I don't know. What did Matt put in your coffee?
We haven't had any coffee.
I mean, it's all... Most of the time, it's a function of what's in that coffee. Remember that?
Yes.
And I'm not there to deliver you Starbucks, remember?
That's right. But
they are coming with, Uber / drone delivery. So on the ninth floor, you can just open the window, bind you the temperatures, whatever it is. They'll deliver through the window to you.
I'll get one of those big butterfly nets like Harry Carey used to have. Just reach the butterfly net out, and I can drop it right in.
I like that.
There you go.
It's not a bad idea, actually.
No. What else is going on?
Nothing. What's with the market? Had a huge rally coming back from the depths a few weeks ago.
Yeah, it did almost 1,000 points in the Dow in 5 days.
Have you ever seen...
We had to step aside. We said, this is too much. We're just flat. We're not short. We're just flat for now.
I made a few trades, Fari, that I hesitate even to mention because they were just routine trades. And there are people that came to want to do a little more protective stuff. New accounts, so I lightened up some of the stuff they had in there. And I said, okay, it looks to me like with the fangs getting beat up the way they did, I haven't been in the QQQs in ages. So I said, I'll put them in the QQQ, even though it's the protected program. So I buy the QQ. I think our entry price, like 161. This is 8 days ago. I bought the 61 puts, sold like the 67 and a half calls, going, well, I'll be fine. You know, but I was pretty bullish, so I figured, okay, let's do these things, you know, pretty far out of the money. We're at 67 in like 2 days. I rolled it to 77s. I rolled up $1, then $2, so I stayed ahead, but didn't get caught in any calls. I rolled the puts up to the 68 yesterday. All right, it's for God's sake, that's 9% in a week. I'll never do that again. I just a routine trade. It's not like I want to have an earnings play or something that goes my way or something where I expect to take kind of a shot and it's a high risk. But this was a routine entry into the market. And then right. I put more people's money into work yesterday where I paid 168, but I made sure I was real tight on a put because I'm not as bullish here. Good thing we're down this morning. And I saw the calls a lot closer to the strike. So I'm instead of being 40 deltas long like I was last week, or 50, I'm probably 25. You know, so, you know, we're fine if it goes down. We'll just roll the puts down. We'll be fine. But it's really is, you know, sometimes the timing is like, you think you're a genius, and I go, I just happen to have to do it today, type of thing, you know. But if you're protected, you don't worry so much about the day you get in. I mean, you'd still like to get in a little lower, but, I mean, I would have rather waited till this morning on some of this stuff, but it's a difference of, you know, 50 cents one way or the other. It'll be fine,
right.
You know. When you're protected, but I don't. This is kind of crazy. I mean, you know what I've seen, and I don't want to infect your brain with this because I know I'm the only one that has this infection. I actually this thing with the Fed. I actually spent some time the other night going through all the numbers from the Fed because you get them out now. They went from a 3.5% money supply growth to 6 in 5 weeks. Right?
Mm.
And people wonder why the market's going up. Duh.
Hello.
Yeah. I mean,
we had some also good earnings too.
Well, okay, but that it's all about
no,
is there money?
Aaron Whisper numbers people wanted to.
I know, but is there money or is there?
The gap basis, they were solid. So.
I know that
guidance is an issue, but we've known that. I think the guidance being an issue is priced in, say, past end of September, early October. So, well, let me cut off this squawk box. Go ahead.
Well, I'm just saying it comes down, if you look at the broad history, it really comes down to, are people pouring money in the system or are they not? It shouldn't be that way.
Mm-hmm.
It should just be earnings. It should be how companies are doing. It should be economy. It should be all that stuff. Because the other stuff clouds
right.
it.
Right. I agree. You know? In principle, I agree.
But if you have, you mentioned more than most, 1% of the people control the country. They don't want their assets going down. That's where they make their money. It's not like they're getting a paycheck.
Yeah.
So I think if I'm going to make one goal for the rest of my investment life, instead of just watching this stuff and figuring everybody else is watching it like I am and not really trading on it, I'm going to start trading on it more. As soon as I see these guys starting a little bit of a, because I always assume that I'm not the only person that reads this stuff, and that whatever I think is already that I didn't get the first memo that somehow or another
your dog got the memo. No,
yeah, well, but I have always thought that whatever I see something.
I mean, I don't get anything to read until Tico's gone over it anyway. So.
Well, that's right.
I assume it's the same rule applies to your household.
Little paw print on it. You got to have that. You know?
Yeah.
But I mean, sometimes maybe should be more aggressive. You see the Fed change, and I'm going, God, these guys have just thrown up the white flag. We should probably get along here, which I did, you know, and pulled my calls away in a lot of spots. But I still never just said, let's buy something for the next 2 weeks and let it rip. Because boy, oh boy, what a nice trade that would have been. I mean, you do more of that than I do. I mean, but once in a while, I just immediately assume that everybody knows what's happening. That the, you know, that the banks are getting the phone calls, and instead of saying, you know, sell me some bonds, it'll be buy me some bonds. That's a hell of a phone call. That's a hell of a change. And what did that phone call? Just saying.
Well, by the way, notice that article. I don't know, was it last night or the night before last? I posted on. I think it was from Bloomberg, where the banks got in tax cuts, and they turn around and fire some people, gave some bonuses. And they're lending less.
Oh yeah.
So the populace out there, the average populace out there, not happy with the fact that the tax, they got a pat on the back, got a big corporate tax cut, but there's no really loan money injection.
Well, that's what when you look at this, a couple of people on the Democratic side are coming out now saying they want to have some restrictions on stock buybacks.
Yep.
Okay.
There we go.
And so
we're starting off.
Well, and you don't want government telling people in business how to run their place.
Yeah.
But how do you, at some point, I mean, you and I have talked about this before. I honestly believe.
Watch 439.
I believe that the board system at these big companies is broken.
Mm-hmm.
That whatever they're supposed to do, they're not doing. So, well, what do you do if you're a president who's aware of things? You sit there and go,
who is smarter than his generals?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
But I mean,
I'm just checking.
This dividend thing, whether you should buy back stock or pay a dividend or invest money yourself, this has been we kicked this around weekly in grad school in 1975, for God's sake, right? It's a problem but when you start to see constantly we always err on the side of buying stocks back. It tells me that the boards are being pushed aside because the people who have the stock options are making these decisions, and it has nothing to do with whether or not it's good economics or not.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how do you, at a federal level, it's probably not something you want to get into, but by the same token, how can you not recognize it?
Mm.
I mean, it's just bad business. It should be a dividend. Why, and then you hear some people who, and this part, these are intelligent people. They say, look at the money you're giving back to your shareholders. Now, let me get this straight for you. You have a certain amount of common sense, maybe because you came from another country. If I buy a stock from somebody rather than giving a dividend, aren't I buying stock from somebody who no longer wants to be a shareholder?
True.
I mean, how am I giving money?
Well, maybe you're also reduced, but yeah.
Well, could be.
Partial. So it's not a complete out, but it's still on a stockholder role, but less is taken in the company.
But the idea is the bonus situation and the stock options are now infecting of employees to the place, or maybe even board members are now infecting the business decisions, which is what.
Also, it goes the other way too.
How?
You know, when like in 2001, a lot of dot-coms were faced with that problem. You get an extremely demoralized working force, especially on the tech side. Because those guys understand the stuff better, and they were in it for a long run, and now they're holding paper that's probably the wallpaper for their bathroom.
Well, sure.
And of course, why the stock options are in the underwater? Why are they worthless? Well, because the stock has dropped.
That's right, because the company's worthless.
So the business is slower, the prospects are slower, sentiment is different, and so you get a it's like a buying stocks on margin. All of a sudden accentuates the problem, and you get an extremely demoralized workforce.
Fari, when I was in grad school, one of the hardest things, and the instructor, I was going to say professor, I was going to say teacher, but the professor, and he was all over this because he knew it was frustrating the hell out of people, including me. One of the two hardest things you did was, I always thought international economics and money flows was, especially before you had the euro, and you only had like basically one other, well, I won't say just one other, but when you come from the Midwest, that's like all new to you, and how, you know, and how stuff move in relation to, you know, if you buy gold in the dollar, you lost money, but if you bought it with the yen, you made money. You know, that's hard. It's really hard for somebody to pick up on that, especially if you're Chicago Southsider. The other one was trying to design, compensation packages for people that push the company forward just the way you wanted it pushed forward. Mm-hmm. It is very difficult to do. It's very difficult to do. Because sure. Okay. every time...
I was chairman of compensation committee, and this is, late 90s into 2000 plus, and it was same difficulty. Yeah. I mean, you have to... You want to balance the boat for the good times and bad times, especially for key talented people, and you get buffeted by that 2001 debacle. It's just crazy.
Well, but because everything has, you know, it's funny. Why we do stocks and jacks? Before you came on with Lou and Maddie, we were talking about what every defense and every offense in football, or really in baseball, has a hole in it, right? Yeah. You're overcompensating for one thing, and there's always a hole in it.
Yeah.
The trick is to find
hole. And we spend money on consultants. It wasn't that hey, I sat down one day and cooked up this plan. No. You gotta get board approval. Da da da. And you would have consultants come in, and you pay them, and that's part of your documentation, actually, that, hey, we didn't cook up just an idea. But when you get to a severe environment, for example, I mean, I wasn't around at 2008, but at that time the company was sold to Intuit for a nice sum. But other firms, I could just imagine what went through in 2008, 2009. For example, financials, purely financial companies. I mean, listen. You know, you're in at, you have a stock option at Morgan Stanley at 55 to 60 in 2006. Okay, you're new hire, you get options at higher, you know, high level, new hire, you get stock options at 650, okay, 50, 55 area. It traded there. By January of 2009, it was trading at 6.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Okay, nobody hangs around. They all hit the eject button. And now, how does the company survive? Tough, very tough.
Well, but they do, they roll them down.
Yeah, but not everybody hangs around. Some people eject, they just have habits.
Yeah, you get a new start.
You get a new start on those who decide to stay on. And I would say, yeah, I'd probably give them more because they didn't hang around. Because now the future of the company itself as an ongoing concern is an issue. But,
not an easy problem.
That portion was a huge, I mean, remember, these are 5-year warrants, typically, okay? What is the future of a company like that 5 years hence? Nobody can tell.
Well,
the Kuno probability is so wide. Tico's guess is as good as yours.
Well, every time this guy he'd say, "Here's the deal. We just bought this company. We got a new CEO. We're bringing him in, and here's our plan. Here's our products. We've got the 20-year plan, the 10-year plan, whatever. Design a compensation package." And the next day, like, he'd have two people, mostly guys, but he was not nice to the women either. He'd pick somebody up and he'd go, "All right, my response to this is to do that. Is that what you want?" "Well, no. Well, that's what's going to happen with this plan." It was like, okay. But he would flat out say, if you walk in and you hire Maddie Weber and you say, "Maddie, you deserve $200,000 a year, but you know what? This company's going places. I'm giving you $100,000 a year and I'm giving you these stock options at 55 and the stock's trading 52. You're going to make a fortune on these things." And you're right. 2 years later, the stock's 20. Maddie says, "Well, somebody else is offering me $200,000. I'm out of here because this thing's never going to be 55 in my lifetime." And off he goes. Now you came to the point where there was no. It was not very well thought out because A, you were paying less than market, too much less than market, probably at half, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if it's one thing to say I'm going to pay you 175 and hook you into the place, but now you also want to hook them into the place where they don't do anything illegal, because maybe some of the money has to be put in escrow, because what if the guy does something illegal and cooks the books and he goes to jail? Now, mm-hmm. you owe the guy dough, or if the company has to pay a fine, you don't want to do that either. But if you were to say, if you just would have lobbed stock options out there, the first thing this professor would have said is, now you guys are never going to pay a dividend in their life. All they're going to do is buy stock back. This is 1975. So it's not like the reaction to this is new. You know, I mean, this is something every board member should know. That if I go down this road, all these guys are going to do is want to buy the stock back. So you know what they're going to do? They're going to give you, the board member, a stock option as well. So at least you're in the same boat. Now that's exactly what you don't want to have as an outside board member, right?
Yeah. Well, you know,
You don't.
I was there 11 years. First five, we had just discovered that the books were cooked by the company who sold it to our investment group. And I forget who was it, Ernest and Young. I forget who was our big five accounting firm. And then we couldn't fire him because they would show possibly an issue with the ongoing concern in the comments. Okay, it was back then a pink sheet stock. You know, it was trading like a dollar something. So you were damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. So we decided as board members not to have any compensation. We had zero, okay, for 5 years. And then after that, now that we cleaned up and did the write-offs and still kept the same auditors, it was, I forget who it was. It wasn't Ernst Young.
See, I don't think they should do that. I don't think people should do that.
What?
I don't think people should do that. I think you should get some stipend.
Yeah, we got nothing. We absolutely got nothing. But of course, I was the weakest of the other three outside directors. Those two were fairly strong guys. One was a chairman of board trustee of Princeton. The other one ran the Princeton Fund. These guys had bucks.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter.
This was nothing. Yeah, yeah.
It doesn't matter.
For me, I hunger because of experience I was getting. So I was the intern, so to speak, with these guys, you know. The guy owned Carnation. Carnation was sold for 2.7 or 2.8 billion to Nestle. He didn't need money, okay? So, but I want to hang out to learn. And so that's fine. 5 years was nothing, period. But then we got some stock options after we did S2 registration, raised additional funds after we cleaned up the books. And I hired some of the technical types, and we started coming with new products, and the company got healthy. I mean, if you look at it, 11-year change of balance sheet was incredible. Going from seeing what the problems were and flipping to the upside, that's why it got attractive to Intuit, and they bought it. It was a major, major long-term...
Well, did you get stock?
Slow cooker, if you will, turnaround plan, okay? You learn a lot. You learn a lot. And, of course, along the way, though, we had a lot of challenges. Y2K was a big thing. Credit card companies. Yeah. This was a major credit card processor. We did a processing for Discover. And we did most of the restaurants for American Express.
As everybody who I think listens, certainly people know me, know that I'm not, you know, some greedy sort of dude. But I've also learned along the way, for maybe people beating into my head, you can't always be the somebody who can't go in and be essentially the boss of the CEO. And when he's talking to you, he's making $1,000 an hour and you're sitting there for nothing.
No, I realize that. Yeah, but you know, those guys were also on very reasonable pricing.
We
gave them more later. Listen, when we sold the company, the CEO made $3 million, net. Yeah.
Okay.
And his wildest dream, he didn't think he would be ever going to make that.
But I'm saying, he
made it on the back end. But while we're going through trouble, you have to. Everybody's got to be on a limited budget, and you survive, but you can.
Well, the people on the SIBO, and I can say it now because a long time ago, if you were a floor member...
Oh, I mean, these are 90s, of course, dollars.
These are 90s. But as a floor member, yeah. I was paid $1,000 a meeting. There were 12, mm-hmm. there were 11 or 12 meetings.
Yeah, and but that's SIBO, senor. Don't
I
come,
understand
that's
it.
A multi-billion-dollar business.
No, but I'm saying the outside guys at the time...
I mean, we were a small company. It was on the pink sheets.
The outside guys
Yeah.
Most of them traveled here for the meeting. They got a a $20,000 a year stipend for having their picture in the meeting, for lending themselves to the place.
Right.
And they got $1,000 a meeting. So I don't think that was absorbent at all. But why you should, you know, leave New York, fly to Chicago, spend a day here, and not get paid for your time. It shouldn't be $20,000 a day.
If the company can afford it, they should pay you. And this will also protect you on E&O basis.
Yeah, well, yeah.
And you guys do. You guys are big enough to do that. And the type of directors you would attract, they would demand that also. It's a two-way street. These guys, the reason they got involved, because they had investment in, before they found out the books were cooked. Okay? And so now they had to save it. That's how I became board member. Otherwise, I had no love for this company. It's just that the one they found out that the book was crooked, now they were semi-pregnant. What are you going to do, walk away?
Well, I'm just... Matty, you can be the judge here, but I think though to ask me as a trader to go to New York, I expect you to pay my way, you ask me to take a day off work, I don't think $1,000 was over the top.
No, I agree. But we were local. We were mainly local. We were down in L.A. You drove up. We have one guy was out of New York, Carl Schaefer, late Carl Schaefer, he passed away. He was on, he worked for David Rockefeller. He was with Rockefeller Brothers. And, after he left Princeton. But he would be our only major expense. And I think they did something for him, but these guys have fancy expense accounts. You know,
sure.
He could afford it. If you work for David Rockefeller, you can afford cross-cut.
When you mentioned the consultants, did you ever, in your board experience...
But if it's a small-time, you know, consultant, of course not, you know. Nobody forced them to hang around. We all did out of our... fact that we wanted to be there, so we have no complaints.
But did you ever even hear in all your hearings of the world of somebody hiring a compensation consultant to come in and review the compensation of the high end people at a place that came in and said they were paid too much?
No.
nor are you likely to be, or that guy will never get another job. That's how a friend of ours got in trouble. They hired these compensation guys. And it's an interesting story. I'll keep it under a minute. And they came in and we talked about how the CBOEs, their only competition was the heads of like the Board of Trade, the New York Stock Exchange, and the CME, which were 10 times bigger than the CBOE, right? So they said these guys were woefully underpaid. So one board member who we know pulled out cranes and said, for a firm that does $500 million in business, here's the 15 executives, and every one of them are making a lot less than our guys. Our guys are overpaid. You don't imagine that was a fart in church.
Yep.
Because the guys came in, not only are you guys underpaid, everybody else gets 3 country club memberships, your guys are only getting 2, you're cheating these guys. I'm like, I'm listening to this going, I see the game now. It was pretty incredible, Fari. Then you sit there and you're like, you're not paying. The best was we weren't paying the guy's tax accountant.
Yeah.
We're paying him so much that we had to pay for his tax guy. Anyway, Fari, thank you very much, buddy. Talk at you next week.
You got it.
SP Futures down 17, Dow Futures down 140. We've been right here. We'll come back with Mr. David Andelman, see if it's a buy here. We'll be right back. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous. No return on cash balances. May have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. It's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of HomeSource Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now.
Right now. Hello, everybody. Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Hardy, Mr. David Andelman, and Mr. Matt Weber on the board. I have a quote here for you, Matty. Who is this? I believe one should fight for what one believes, provided one is absolutely sure one is absolutely right. Think about that one for a second. S&P futures down 16, Dow futures down 136, NASDAQ futures down 146. So we've been right in this range really since we came in. Not a good range, but that's where we've been. Around the rest of the world, we've got the DAX down 151.3%, FTSE up 3, call that flat. CAC around down 32.6%. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei down 122.6, Hang Seng up 59.2. And Shanghai, we're going to ask David if it's still closed or not, or they're doing a catch-up there. Oil down 39 cents, Brent down 26. Spread now is, $8. Actually, not $8. Yeah, it's $8.80 now. It's moved up. Natural gas, $2.60. RBOB, $1.43. Home heating oil, $1.89. The gold's still leaking a little bit, down another $4.50. It's up to $13.25 or so now. It's back to $13.09. Silver down 5 cents, $15.65. Maybe what do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
Coming up on 35 minutes past the hour. Good morning.
You were Googling that quote, you know.
No. I'm waiting for the answer. I don't cheat. Coming up on 35 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We have some flooding issues now in the south suburbs and south side. I-94 eastbound at 159th Street. There's flooding on the ramp to the outbound Bishop Ford. That's causing issues. On I-57 northbound right at Dixie Highway, there's flooding blocking the two left lanes. So standing water in the two left lanes are causing issues on I-57 northbound. So the rain has been coming down for several days now, it feels like, and it really came down last night and early this morning, and it's affecting the south suburbs and south side specifically. Still have that issue on the Indiana Toll Road. It's closed due to an earlier accident. The eastbound lanes of the toll road at Klein Avenue, which is mile marker 3.8, are blocked with a crash involving two vehicles.
This happened about 45 minutes ago or so, an hour ago, and it's still out there. So the Indiana Toll Road East, that's between Wolf Lake and Klein Avenue on the Indiana side. Back on the Illinois side, no issues on the Stevenson. Heavy traffic on the Eisenhower, Kennedy, and Edens. We had an earlier crash on the Kennedy. That's all clear. Significant crash on Lakeshore Drive. Looks like it's the crash was on the southbound side of Lakeshore Drive. It's not showing me the cross street. Oh, right at Fullerton. So the southbound Lakeshore Drive at Fullerton, it's affecting both sides of Lakeshore Drive. Hollywood to Monroe, 27 minutes. Stop and go traffic on Lakeshore Drive as crews work to get that crash cleared. Out in the western burbs, Butterfield Road, which is Route 56 at Highland Avenue, there is a crash. That's out in the Lombard Downers Grove area. And then just south of there, there's a closed railroad crossing work that's closed Forest Avenue between Burlington and Warren. Everything else looking okay. Weather today, lots of rain in the forecast on and off throughout the day. It's raining right now and 38 degrees going up to a high of 44. Then a cold front comes in and we'll be frigid tomorrow with 4 degrees overnight, wind chills at around negative 20, and then our high tomorrow will be about 14 with wind chills below zero. So enjoy the warmth today. It's going to be cold tomorrow. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 58 today. Right now it's clear and 37. In sports, Bulls lost at home to the Pelicans 125-120. Before the game, it was announced they traded Bobby Portis and Jabari Parker to the Wizards for Otto Porter. The Suns were blown out by Utah 116-88, and Notre Dame lost at Miami 62-47. Chief.
So, Manny, have you checked the Chicago area river levels for flooding?
No, but I bet that's all over the place.
We're getting there. How would you like to have a flood like in your first floor of your basement when it's 14 degrees tomorrow?
That doesn't sound great.
Can you imagine? So, yeah, we've got Illinois River flooding. We got North Branch, Chicago River at Niles. We got Des Plaines River at Gurnee, all over the place. David, are you near any of these places?
Not really, no. I mean, I'm by the lake, but...
You're high and dry? Good for you.
High and dry.
Just for people who never been on the Illinois River where they have the various... levels of the Illinois River at Marseille is going to go into flood level at 18 feet, right? It's normally 13 feet deep. Just below that, where the dam is at Ottawa, it's 400 feet deep. Then below the dam, it's then 22 feet again. Isn't that wild? There you go, David. All right, so what's happening? Why are we heading south after everybody's been bullish for weeks and the Fed's pouring money in, and all of a sudden, yes, they seem like kind of maybe a tone change day a little bit, but I didn't really expect to be down as much this morning. I thought we'd, maybe be down a little bit, but not this much. What do you make of it?
I don't know. I think it's technical. I mean, I don't see anything in the news. We're up against a deadline, not too far away, February 15th for, another government shutdown. There are signs that, some kind of a deal where, they'll call it a barrier instead of a wall and, 10 key spots and some funding and divert funding from others so that, both sides can claim victory. That's typical. But nevertheless, Trump could say no and shut down the government again next week. And, we're not too far, 3 weeks or so from, either trade deal of some form or another. Increase in tariffs. I don't expect either of those events to happen. But, there's some trepidation. But beyond that, I think the fact that, resolution of, the border security issue and the trade deal is baked into the price. And I don't think that either resolution is going to be what, everyone would really want. There'll be frameworks and, both sides say win, but underneath there's soft deals. And so, from a technical standpoint, we were very, very extended. We've had a huge run, off the lows in a very short period of time. And I think, a correction, being frank, I've been wrong for a little over a week. But technically, the markets really, really need at least 3% down, and maybe a little bit more than that.
What? Just a political question. For one minute. It seems like what you just described, I think, is probably 90% chance of happening. By the way, we're not supposed to do that on radio, but the posturing and the, you know, the idea that it's all semantics and is anybody, you know, when you come right down to it, it's a difference of a couple billion dollars on a wall. There's people stealing a couple billion dollars by the minute in Washington, you know, so it's not like,
I mean, no question.
It's
about
you know, so I mean, on the one hand, you have a couple of my guys who are they're not Trump supporters at all, and they said, Jesus Christ, give the guys $5 billion. What's the difference? It's not even like rounding on the bottom line. I mean, obviously, to consider stuff a wall, the fact that he's calling all these people rapists and murderers, which they're not. I mean all the other stuff that goes with it. You know, I'm trying to get this stuff, but there's a weird change going on here, David. I mean, as you know, as much as you can't help but getting older, but I try and listen, as much as they don't think I am, I try and listen to the younger people, maybe more than most. I mean, I try to anyway. And even though I'm technically, you know, very challenged in a lot of stuff, I manage to get my TV on okay. It's all right, you know. And I actually have a smartphone now. I don't know how to work it, but I got one. But you look at...
I have a car with 48,000 parts, but I don't know what probably 2,000 of them do.
I have no desire to get a car that talks to me, talks at me. I mean, I'll go out and buy a 20-year-old pickup again if I have to. I don't want any of that stuff in there. I want to turn the lights on. I want to put the key in and turn the thing on. I want to go.
And God bless, because yeah. This one that I have, it turns the lights on when it feels me approaching, and then when I get out of the car, I have to worry that the lights are on all day because I never see them go off.
Well, Audrey, my high-tech significant other, get a load of this, Maddie. She loved her Cadillac that she got rid of like 4 or 5 years ago. That four-wheel drive was a bigger one than the one now. All real estate ladies seem to have the Cadillac SUV. So she loves it. So I'm digging through the Auto Trader, and I find one the same year she had. Now it's older now, but the thing is, some Florida guy owns it. It's got like 20,000 miles on it. I said, all right, I'll go down to Florida. I'll get it for you. Well, I don't want that anymore. Well, why not? Because it doesn't have Wi-Fi. It doesn't have this. Doesn't have that. I said, you just said it's safer. It's got four-wheel drive. It handled much better. The brakes were better. Yeah, but now I need, like, a place to put my phone, and I need this. Okay. to me, the conversation was, what are
if
we...
If it isn't a smart computer drives itself, I don't want it.
Yeah, it's like, I should tell you what. I'm like, the thought, I wouldn't even think about this. I'd pull that stuff out if I could. Anyway, are you sensing what's going on in Washington? I would talk about a little bit with Maddie. I'd love to opine. All this political stuff behind the wall, used to be, or behind the veil, you sort of knew what was going on, and you knew people came here with their adjustments, and all they cared about was something from their district or something for themselves, and you didn't expect these people to be pals when they went there, and yet at the end of it, you preach compromise, you preach how to do stuff. There was Robert's rules, who got to talk the same amount. There was a whole choreography of getting things, I'll use the term, done. And now it seems like the games people are playing and the lies they tell on a daily basis, when it's right out in front of everybody, by every social media piece on earth that even I listen to me, I hate like hell to say this, but I'm in Maddie Weber's camp. They just look like buffoons. They don't look like there's any serious negotiation going on. It's all BS. I mean Schumer does. I mean, Trump looks like an idiot. Then Schumer gets on, he looks like a bigger idiot. I mean, the game is... I mean, Maddie, am I right? Young people just look at this and go, what is this?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're dead on.
And I don't know, can't we just sit down and have something normal here? It seems to me this wall thing could have been done. I mean, obviously Trump wants it to be more than a hunk of steel. He wants it to be a victory for his people that hate Mexicans, don't want anybody here, think they're all rapists, think they're stealing money from everybody else on taxes and everything else. Well, the simple fact is that's not true. And the Democrats don't want that to be true. They don't want
the symbol of the wall.
Yes, and I understand that.
And I don't either.
I don't either. I mean,
I think it represents everything that's wrong. It's not even the point of it. It's just, in my opinion, but... That's why
I think you're spot on.
The money
well,
doesn't matter,
and I'm not defending Trump, and I don't like the idea of a wall either. But what I heard this morning did make some sense, and not in deference to either party, because I always vote independent. But you know, supposedly they brought in 10 experts or whatever that said, "Hey, these are the spots these 10 areas from this place to this place. This one's 1 mile long. This one's 2 miles long, you know, whatever. And this is a spot where, you know, caravans are entering in illegally, and we need more than, you know, technology and surveillance and even, you know, guards and security people or whatever. We need a barrier here in these 10 locations, not 2,000 miles long. And I don't know what the figure is, maybe a total of 40 miles, you know, whatever. And if you put this up along with technology and surveillance and, you know, manpower and in other areas, you'll dramatically improve the security and safety. I mean, that to me does make some sense.
I will. On one hand, it makes perfect sense, David, to use your head and start out here and there. On the other hand, by the way, this is not aimed at you. God, that's the most ignorant thing I ever heard. It's like whatever. Matty, you're too young. Silly putty. You squeeze it here and it pops out there. I mean, David, when you get an alarm on your car, what do you really get it for?
What do I get it for? Yeah. So that if, you know, somebody who shouldn't be in it is trying to break in.
Like, what you really get it for is so the guy will leave your car alone and go to the car next door.
That's right.
Your ADP in your window, don't rob my house, rob the neighbor's house. He doesn't have it.
Right, no, I get what you're saying. And there is the other thing that I worry about is, let's say there's some kind of compromise. They give $3.5 billion and, you know, put up, you know, whatever, segments of barriers. We won't call them walls. No. They won't be concrete. They'll be steel. They'll be see-through. And, okay, that's okay with us as long as you put in extra jobs and, you know, extra surveillance. And, you know, divert, you know, $2.5 billion from some other thing in the with the word that it's national emergency or whatever. We know how these things work.
Yep.
You know, you buy a toilet and it's $10,000. We know that if it's $5.5 billion or five or six or whatever the number is, that's not going to all get spent where we want it.
No.
It's going to get pocketed or diverted or never get put into where it wanted to. You know, the mayor of El Paso will get, you know, a basketball court or whatever, and, you know, instead of extra protection or whatever. I mean, it just, and that's the problem. Yeah, like you said before, oh, $5.5 billion, it's a minor nothing, you know, it's in the scheme of things, you know, just give them the money and, you know, let's get all the other stuff that's important done. But it doesn't happen that way.
No, it doesn't. Let me ask you this. Here's a question for you know, master's degree guy. And Matty listens to everybody on here, and he's learning along the way. On one hand, I don't want a wall. On the other, but I also don't understand. I mean, you can't just have the U.S. being the safety valve for a totally dysfunctional other part of the continent. Now, my question is, and I, as much as I will rail on our politicians not being perfect, because I want America to be perfect, and I know it's, you know, it's not going to be there. You want to be perfect yourself, and you can't get there. But if you don't strive for it, you're not going to get close. Now, the question is, David, why, and this is more than a 10-minute discussion, we've done a lot of stuff for NAFTA. And here's where I will agree with Trump on his level, which is the lowest level of the chessboard. I honestly believe that, so I'll say it. I mean, at one level, and it's the reason why he appeals to people, is we've done the NAFTA thing. We've got plants in Mexico. We've got all this economic stuff that we've tried to bring to the fruition down there, and we've had people, even including the long deceased Milton Friedman, say if you bring this kind of quote economic progress to a place, even if their political system is not so good, they will eventually, the right people will start making more money. They'll demand more dough. But over a period of 10 or 15 or 20 or 25 years, you're going to create so much progress that. Economic progress is that you're going to be really making customers for yourself, and that, in essence, is a good deal. Well,
right.
And Trump looks down there, and so does Carl Denninger, and a few other people know more about that than I do. And so when General Motors went down there, they were paying $3 an hour, and here it is 30 years later, and they're still paying $3 an hour. And whatever we think was going to work hasn't. A few people have stolen all the money. And by the way, the people who don't get paid want to come up here and spill across the border. Well, that wasn't the intention. Now we got people right. coming from Central America, okay, which I get it. It's nobody probably wants to live there. But we're giving aid to Central America, and here we are 200 years after the Monroe Doctrine. Every one of these people still has, every one of these countries still has some stupid dictator that steals all the dough. People don't have any money, and they all want to come here. Is there any chance that we could turn this bus around and there actually is enough, you know, way to make a living in Mexico where you don't have to come here? Because it's not like I don't want people here. I have, as Maddie knows, I have a spectacular amount of Mexican friends, and I think they're terrific people. But I also know they have family down there that isn't working. They have people that are sending, we have people that are sending money back there because nobody there has got a job. My question is why, despite our best efforts, and I really think we've tried to help. I honestly believe that. Even though I'm not into this politician or that politician. Maddie, would you agree with that? Over a 50-year period, we've spent money and tried to help. I think we have. And yet, I think we've almost made it worse. People just stole our money and made it even harder for somebody to throw them out of office.
And then if they're making $3 an hour or worse yet, they're unemployed, then they, get in bed with the drug cartel,
right.
and we wonder why drugs are coming over the border.
I mean, I don't know if we've harmed the issue but clearly we haven't helped it all that much. Now, does that mean we want to cut the money? And Trump looks at it, and like I said, on the first level, and says, we've been throwing money down here forever. And guess what? It still looks pretty lousy to me. And you know what? He is not wrong. Is he, Manny?
Right. No, that I agree with.
He is not wrong. Why are we giving these people dough? What does it do for us? We got them piling across the border. We're still taking care of half of them. And oh, by the way, it still looks like 10 guys make 90% of the money. So, I mean, it's not like he's wrong. So, I mean, I try and listen.
He's right on a lot of things. Same
yeah.
thing with the trade deal or trade skirmishes and wars with China. They've, exploited the situation and stolen the intellectual property and, forced technology and, forced business relationships. You want to do business in our country, we're 50% partners or more, and blah, 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 blah. He's not wrong. It's just the way he executes.
Well, and you know what? There are people, and some of the best managers I've ever been around, some of the guys at Pullman or whatever, or even a couple of guys at CBOE were really that good. I mean, CBOE had some really good people. There's always problems that people can see, right? But when you attack one, you should attack it, I think. Now, want your guys' opinion on this. You want to attack it when you think you or somebody might have a solution. If you just pull the scab off and you don't have another Band-Aid, you didn't do any good. Or you don't have a Band-Aid. I mean,
right.
any organization, but I'll bet, Maddie, you could list 5 things at your place that really, in your mind, need to be changed. Maybe it's 3, maybe it's 4. Am I right or not?
Oh, yeah.
But unless you have the solution and can bring it about, you'll say, what am I doing? Why are we going to fight about it? We have no other way of doing it, even though someday we hope we do. But when that day happens, you would hope you pull the scab off and say, by the way, here's this really nice Band-Aid and this whole thing's going to be, just listen to me and it's going to be done. I mean, Trump likes to pull a lot of scabs off. I don't see him with a solution for anything other than at the other side somehow kissing the mistletoe. I mean, the stuff in Mexico is a massive problem. It has to do with governance for 200 years. It has to do with debts they haven't paid. It has to do with, you name it. I mean, and we did some business with people down there and actually have a, how can I say this politically correctly, Manny? Mexican people stealing money from other Mexican people is a national sport. It absolutely is a national sport.
Well, it's a human sport because it happens in every country.
Not to this extent, Manny. Not even close.
I would argue that our government steals from us just as much. Local and federal.
What would you say if a guy came to you, met me at the Tripoli of all places, and said, I got a deal for you, can you go and find me a bank? I said, well, for the right reason, I probably could find a bank. You and I have had beers with a couple of guys that know a lot about banks, and if we wanted to find a small one and somebody had the money, I bet we could find one, right? I'm not going to steal one. I mean, we'd go there.
Find one? What are you talking about?
A
bank.
They wanted to buy a bank.
Oh, buy a bank. Okay.
Well, you need to find one that you can buy. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, sound like to hold one
that's
up.
Sorry, that's a trading. When you say, I need to find a building, it means you want to buy a building.
Well, you can buy anything if you have enough money.
I understand it. Right. So, and I said, okay, what do we need a bank for? Well, we need to have this money we can put in from Mexico. Now, how are we going to get this money exactly? Well, in Mexico, when you pay your taxes to, say, the city of Chicago, Chicago doesn't hold on to the money. They send the money to Mexico City. So we would send it, I guess, to Washington or Springfield, which is a totally different style than we have. So then, because they get just amount for their budget, and then they have to give their budget, essentially Mexico City, then the money comes back when you need it. Well, if you overspend, you get to borrow. Okay? A big time interest. So, and then you actually can get a piece of paper that says, before you get the money back from Mexico City, the borrower, the holder of the note, gets paid first. So, what we could have done is gone down there and pick a little town, West End, Mexico, and if all of a sudden they needed $500,000 or $1 million from they screwed up on their budget, we could lend them the dough at like 15% or 20% for short term, and then we would get actually the money right from the Mexican government. So the last thing a town needs is somebody like us in the middle stealing 15% of the dough and money that they've sent to Mexico City, their own money. I mean, I don't know if we've ever contrived anything quite that sinister, have we? That I know of. I said, I think I'm out on this deal. You can't imagine.
That's probably a right move.
Well, you can't imagine me doing that. I could never do that. Yeah, I'm like, this is genius. I mean, how could you possibly, how would you think of something like that? Stealing 20% from a town of their own dough. I mean, I don't know if he found another place or what he did. I just get out of my saloon, kind of. Yeah, basically. Can you imagine that? I'm not lying. Tell me again how you think our guys steal.
I think we're a little more buttoned up than that, but I think we steal just as much.
Maybe because we haven't thought of it. Yeah. I agree with that. So anyway, I mean, it's a problem. So David, how much in the tank is there if somehow there is I think there's going to be some kind of a deal on the wall within a couple of weeks. I honestly believe that. Is it in the market? Does this, if it's announced today at 12, do we come back to 15 spoo points and another 20, or is it already in? And what about China? We've thrown the China card on the table for 50 rallies by now. Is it good for 10 more or what?
No. I really think it'll be different. First of all, I think the deal on the wall will be this week. I don't think it's going to be a couple of weeks because
the deadline
for another shutdown is the 15th. That's next week. So I don't think it's 2 weeks away. It'll be some kind of compromise. It'll be not 2,000 miles of barrier. It'll be 10 spots. It'll be less money so that Trump will be able to say, see, I got my barrier, and the Democrats will be able to say, hey, we didn't give him $5.6 or $5.7 billion. So both sides will claim victory. And then Trump will say, there is a national emergency. I need another $2 billion, and we're going to take it from disaster relief. And so, both sides will shout from the tower that they're heroes, and neither side really will have won, and who knows what we'll end up getting. That's the way I think that thing will resolve. As far as the Chinese thing, I've thought for a while they will buy more soybeans and more natural gas, and they'll say, don't worry, we'll fix the intellectual property theft, but give us 2 years, we'll phase this out, and force technology and partnerships will phase that out. And Trump will say, see, I won, and the Chinese will say, we didn't give them what they wanted. And so again, both sides will declare, and I think the market will say, we baked a lot of this optimism in, and it didn't come out exactly the way we wanted, and we can see through these flimsy deals, and we're going to take some of this price gain back. I don't think we're going to have a big, big correction. I think it will go back to earnings and multiples and Fed and, Fed and liquidity or non-liquidity, but I think the market needs to take some of this rally back.
If they announce a China deal on a weekend, I don't want to be short Monday morning, maybe Monday noon. I don't know if I want to be short the day.
You know, I'm not going to say you won't have a 15-handle pop in the S&P, but I don't think it will last. Somebody pointed out yesterday, and I think it was an educated individual, that, you know, whatever the deal is, even if it's just committing to more purchases of soybeans, maybe corn and natural gas, that it's not going to be good for their economy, and their economy is already slowing. And whatever, you know, negativism is not from here, it's from abroad. So I don't think at this point, 17% off the lows, that a quote-unquote deal, especially a flimsy deal, is going to be met with a lot of buying.
That could very well be it. I'd love to have, David, and I've lost a minute. We need a guest that can tell us the technological state of the natural gas industry in terms of how easy it is to export and import. I'm going to have to work on signing that. David, thank you very much. S&P Futures still down 15. Dow's only down 130 now. We'll be back tomorrow. Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.